Welcome back to Thoughts on the Social World, the Social World podcast. I'm Dave Niven, and as usual, it's a delight to have your company. And I am pursuing a subject we've pursued before, human trafficking, anti-slavery. But this one's more specific. It's follow the money. And I've never had an expert on here before. And so I'm absolutely delighted to have Karim Rajwani, who's a financial expert, whose history has been involved fully in the finance industry, but has also now been absorbed into the anti-trafficking world, if you like. And he is considered to be an expert in this and working with Anti-Trafficking Intelligence Initiative, ATII, whose people I've had on this program many times. So, look, welcome to the program, Karim.
Thank you.
And it's a pleasure to have you. And I'm so glad that we can look at this aspect of it and allow people to learn a little bit more about this side of things, the financial side of things, and how they can participate and how they can have their awareness raised. So how did you start getting involved in this in the first place?
Sure, Dan, and thank you for inviting me. My background is really a chartered accountant, actually in the UK before I moved to Canada and became a CPA here. But I joined sort of the banking industry and got into the AML space when the regulations were first coming out in Canada in 2001. So really the role was to sort of build out the anti-money laundering program. And soon after that, I really came across a lady, Leanna McDonald, who heads up the Canadian Centre for Child Protection. And that's sort of the sort of primary sort of centre for monitoring sexually explicit images on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And we started sort of a project from there in terms of how do we go about identifying sort of at that case, child sexual exploitation. But then over the years, I've been involved in a number of initiatives on human trafficking and child sexual exploitation more broadly. As you say, I'm involved with the ATII, the Anti-Human Trafficking Intelligence Initiatives, where I chair their advisory board and act as a senior advisor. And also the Rahab's Daughters, which focuses on rescuing trafficking victims.
It's quite a responsibility. This sounds a very simplistic question, but first of all, do you feel that you're making progress?
That is a great question, and it may not seem so, because, you know, if you look at the size of the problem, and what we can go into that in more detail, versus sort of the number of victims that have been rescued, identified, funds stopped, the number of suspicious activity reports filed, you know, doesn't seem to show that we're making a difference. But, you know, had you asked me 10 years ago, what's a financial institution's role in stopping human trafficking and child sexual exploitation, I would have said non-zero. Sure what we have to do about this. But if you look at it now, a lot of institutions are doing something about it. It's become a regulatory priority globally. Regulators are putting out guidance on this particular issue. There's a lot of material out there now for financial institutions in terms of what are the red flags? What is it you look for? So I think a lot of work is being done, but my opinion is a lot more needs to be done.
I couldn't help but agree with you more, because I think in every aspect of people trying to advance the cause of protecting the vulnerable and the victims of both abuse and trafficking, the scale of the problem, I believe, is such anyway that it's hugely difficult to actually put figures on things. But maybe we could start with that. And if you could just give us a sense of, in your understanding of the scale of the problem, and then possibly almost like a beginner's guide to the sort of the way and the mechanics, if you like, of financial kind of oversight of this and how that might help.
Sure, yeah. So if you let's start with sort of the magnitude of the problem. And this is just based on, you know, what we know from published reports, such as the UN reports. You know, they estimate this to be a $150 billion problem globally. So that's all forms of you know, human trafficking. And you know, what do we mean by that? There is obviously sex trafficking, child sexual exploitation, labor trafficking, and various other forms of trafficking. That total sort of problem is over $150 billion problem.
Huge, isn't it? Huge. Yeah.
Now that's just based on what we know, probably bigger. If you look at child sexual exploitation, far more difficult to sort of pinpoint that in terms of the problem. But just about every report you read suggests that there is a massive increase in the hundreds, in the thousands of percents. Some of this could be to sort of could be due to better reporting. But also, I think what we are seeing is the spread of the internet, the spread of smartphones. Children having access to smartphones has exacerbated the problem. And then most recently, which is probably not in the statistics, is something called sextortion.
Yes, and yeah.
Right, kids under 18. This is individuals, organized crime gangs. Pretending to be young females, convince a young boy, right now primarily they're young boys under 18, to share a nude picture and then sexport them.
Blackmail them. Yeah.
Yeah, blackmail them essentially. And that has grown anywhere between 1,000 and 7,000% just over the past couple
Oh,
of
it's
years.
huge
And it
figures. Yeah.
is leading to youth suicide. Right. And you know, the victims, whether they're human trafficking victims, child sexual exploitation victims, or sextortion victims, you know, it's a lifelong process of rehabilitation, if ever. So, you know, you are taking them out of society for a very long period of time. So this isn't a, you know, one-off thing, it's a lifelong trauma.
I mean, obviously, you would say, like most people who are involved in this, that massive more resources are needed to help combat this. But could you just give us a bit of an idea of how maybe people on the front line might be more aware and helpful to combating this?
Yeah, and for the general public, for the banking industry, you know, that's where sort of my focus area is. But I think now there is just so much information available to read about this. There are UN reports. All you have to do is, you know, UN human trafficking, and you'll get the most latest report. Around child sexual exploitation, if you go to the Canadian Centre for Child Protection, there's a lot of research for people, not just in terms of the magnitude of the problem, but what can parents do, what can teachers do, what can social workers do to identify, to protect kids. The ATAII website, there are, you know, regulators publish red flags like FINTRAC in Canada. As an extensive list of red flags for human trafficking and child sexual exploitation, they conducted two projects with the bank, Project Protect and Project Shadow. You can look those up. And there's an enormous amount of reading. So I think for people to say, I don't know, there's nowhere to find this information is a fallacy right now. There is more than enough information out there. Cybertip. CA, the Mi'kmaq.
Let me ask you, sorry interrupting you, but I mean I think this is important. Let me ask you this. Anything like all the things you've just listed from the ATII website and so forth, I will make sure is on the front page of this podcast for people to reference and to look at and to learn. So, you know, not only the things you've said, but anything else afterwards that we discussed that you've thought of that might point people in the direction of better awareness, I will put on the front of this podcast. I just want people to understand that.
Yeah, and I can share, I go through this on a regular basis, and I just dump the stuff onto a PowerPoint. It's not very pretty, you know, don't spend time making it pretty. It's really meant for my own purpose to sort of keep a track of what's going on. You know, I can give you a link to that so people have sort of one place to look at least 80% of the information. It won't be 100%, but, you know, a big chunk of it will be there.
Excellent. Well, look, let's start a little bit looking at obstacles that you've found to progress here. Have you come across many obstacles within the professional world, maybe the financial world, for example? I mean, I was under the impression you do get ATII, etc., does get quite a good relationship and listen and people that listen, but there must be others that don't quite get it yet. I mean, have you come across much of that?
I think let's talk the financial world, right? I think it has become really important. It has become a priority. I think the challenge becomes with financial institutions is there's just so many other priorities. You know, because if you talk about financial crime and predicate offenses, there's a slew of information or responsibilities out there. All of them must be monitored. The challenge with this particular area is, you know, typically in money laundering and fraud, you are looking for, you know, high volume, high frequency, you know, repeat sort of repetition, you know, so certainly larger amounts, higher risk countries. With this, I think the problem here is it's very low value and it's low frequency. So, you know, from an identification perspective, historically, it has been extremely difficult to identify. That's not to say, you know, there's been no progress. Significant progress has been made. But this is where I'd say institutions probably need to focus more resources and understanding, you know, how best to sort of retune their capabilities and their systems to focus on the sort of low value, low frequency. Because each transaction is fairly small. Like for sextortion, it could be $8, it could be $20, it could be $100. So not an easy problem, you know, to solve for, but certainly I think technology's come a long way to help here.
Well, what about training? Can I just ask you quickly before you go on about training in the financial world? I mean, public facing people, if you like, the more junior members, the bank tellers or whatever, I can imagine too, but are the more senior people who are actually analyzing, you know, if you like, the whole throughput. I mean, are you managing to alert people enough and provide people with training if they listen to you? Is that something that's needing more resources?
Certainly, I think the banks who are focused on this do have dedicated programs on human trafficking, what to look for. There are banks who help open survivor accounts without sort of getting into the names. So, and there's lots of training out there. So the Association of Certified Anti-Money Laundering Specialists has a free training program out there for this. So it doesn't cost anything. You just sign up, take the training. So there's various trainings on there.
Who in a financial institution, who would actually sign up for it ideally in your view?
So there are sort of various groups. Yeah, certainly the front line to recognize, you know, if a victim comes in with a pimp, It's critical that frontline staff understand that and alert the sort of relevant groups in the organization. The investigation groups within financial institutions, what we call our internal financial intelligence units, these are the teams that investigate, all transactions for potential suspicious activity. That's a really important group that should be trained. And then finally, the teams that are developing the algorithms, the data science teams, to better understand what is the problem, because without understanding the uniqueness of the problem, it's very difficult to design the rules to identify it.
That makes good sense. I understand.
Obviously, you need support from senior management. And so it's really important that there's tone at the top. This comes from top down, that this is important. So I think senior management do need to be aware and be made aware of the size of the problem. This isn't something that's happening somewhere else. This isn't something that's happening to immigrants being brought into a country. This is a domestic problem predominantly.
That's interesting.
While it's horrific, no matter who it happens to, but there is a belief this isn't happening here. And if it is happening, it's just your people brought in, smuggled. No. It's happening to, UK, Canadian, American women. The average age is like 12 to 14 years entry into the sex trade. So it's happening to our kids, our women, our boys.
I mean,
And
how
so,
about can
and it's
I?
massive, right? It's a massive problem.
Can I mean, obviously, the podcast has a fairly worldwide audience, but a lot of it, obviously, as you would guess, there's a substantial amount in the UK and North America. Or, including, Canada and America. But effectively, are you aware of activity in the UK that is progressing this?
When you say progressing in terms of
The fight against it, if you like, in the areas that you were mentioning.
I mean, certainly I think UK in many ways has taken a leadership role. Canada's done something similar with Project Protect and Project Shadow. The UK banks are doing an enormous amount to identify all of these crimes. The European Bankers Alliance, most recently the UK Online Safety Bill, apologies, I may not have got the name right. That is a major step forward.
No, I get that, but it didn't go far enough, if you might say. But anyway, there we are.
It did not go far enough, but I think the responses from, other jurisdictions from mainland Europe has been, well, we'll do a risk assessment and then we'll determine. No. I think you've got to be far more explicit and regulate social media companies, the internet service providers, because
I
it's a
mean,
problem that can be tackled. You certainly can't solve it 100%, but there's something that can be done about it. A lot can be done about it.
well, I know that at least, I mean, if you like, the targets of traffickers also include, obviously, I mean, every year in Europe, there's at least a quarter of a million children go missing. And as far as I was aware, and also aware with the Ukraine war, that diaspora, if you like, was almost like Christmas for the traffickers, in terms of the youngsters that have now disappeared. So it doesn't surprise me what you say, but it's encouraging a little bit that you say that there is an awareness there, perhaps not enough resources yet or focused on it, but certainly a good awareness.
Yeah, and I'd say, my banking colleagues will beat me up and criticize for saying this, but if this is a $150 billion problem globally, probably more, there are reports which say this is in the top five, let's say the top 10 criminal activities now. And you compare that to the number of suspicious activity reports being filed. You know, I can tell you in Canada and in the US, it's minuscule compared to the size of the problem. Let's say the top five, the top 10. Then regulators need to do a little more, unfortunately, to say to the banks, hey guys, what's going on here? The numbers don't add up.
I mean, the big players, obviously, increasingly over the years now, are organized crime, I believe. And also, when talking to your colleagues in ATII, I mean, there's so much activity goes on the dark web, and that essentially is a place of conflict too, when they try and dive deep and actually identify problems to pass to law enforcement.
Certainly, you know, it's a dark web problem, but it's a, you know, open problem. There's lots of stuff in the dark web. But if you look at the human trafficking or the sex trafficking side of things, so by sex trafficking, we mean, you know, trafficking predominantly women. We're talking 75, 80%, according to UN reports, and in some cases over 90% are women, and you know, a large portion, 25% plus, are under 18. In order for the traffickers to do business, they need to do it in the public web. They need to advertise, right? And so, you know, it is out there in the open. Not just in the dark web.
Well, look, how about this? How to promote greater awareness? Where would you say the kind of the pressure points are that we should be focusing on? Not obviously financial institutions, because that's your professional expertise, but there and elsewhere, are there places that you think could be doing far more that's already within their capacity?
And again, I'll say this, and
I'm sorry if I'm getting you in trouble with this.
no, I'm glad you are, because I don't mind getting into trouble. I think the schooling system, I think this has got to be made mandatory as an education program. It's no longer just a problem. It is an epidemic. Sextortion is an epidemic. When something grows 1,000 or 7,000%, that's more than COVID. So it is an epidemic. Why do we need to educate kids on these issues? One, you know, from a sextortion perspective, they need to be aware, you know, what you're seeing online is not real. With the generation of AI and generative AI, the individual will seem real, will talk as if it's a real person, but it's not. So it's really important that kids understand the risks. A lot of them will not care, but unfortunately, we have to show them real life cases. This is the outcome. There's interesting. There's a UK police report, I believe, from the UK police chiefs, just in 2024, which said 52% of the alleged offenders in England and Wales are minors.
Oh, what? Sorry.
Are minors.
Oh, look, blimey. All right. So
This is
it's
ex and
child on
they,
ch child on child.
yeah, and they said this is exacerbated by watching violent porn. So, you know, the consequences of watching violent porn has a direct relationship to child sexual exploitation, to trafficking, to sextortion. So that's why I say the education system needs to be sort of enhanced. You know, the Canadian Centre for Child Protection has material for schools to say, hey, we really do need to educate our kids, but it needs to go more than that. The you know, cell phones are spreading globally. Smartphones,
Absolutely.
right? These are all smartphones. They're mini PCs. In fact, they're more than mini PCs. They're like supercomputers in your hand now. And you know, you can have you know, somebody in the Philippines you know, abusing kids, and that being streamed to the UK or anywhere else in the world. And that's why I think from an education perspective, we've got to begin to sort of target the kids and change that mindset. You know, the financial institutions definitely need to do more. Social media, internet service providers need to do a lot more. I don't think they're clearly doing as much as they should. But you know, self-generated images are on the on the rise. Kids really don't see the problem or the consequences of self-generated images. And it can come back to haunt you for the rest of your life and, you know, result in blackmail and other things. So I think
And
that's why that education.
suicide, and suicide.
Yeah, and suicide. So, you know, it's important that that education happens.
Let me ask you two or three things, because I about 20 years ago, or 25 years, whatever. I mean, I did work some work with Interpol on sex tourism. You know, where people went to some of the more vulnerable countries, maybe in the Pacific Rim or South America or wherever, abused children. But that's developed into actually not just abusing children, but of course, you know, filming it, developing it, selling it, and so forth. And as well as that, I also did a program not long ago about the supply chains that most of our big companies use, whether it's for clothing or for food or for whatever. And somewhere down the line in many of these supply chains, there are children being tortured, being exploited, being killed, and abused in order to satisfy mainly the West's desire for that particular food or these particular clothing or household items. And that seems to me to overlap, if you like you know, like these overlapping circles that you get. And effectively, I think that makes it so much more difficult. And also, the sophistication that you touched on there, the increasing sophistication of AI. So, how, I mean, it's such a broad landscape, isn't it? It makes would probably make some people despair.
Yeah, and you know, begs the question, do we need to take a more coordinated, consolidated effort on social responsibility in the private sector? Because you're right? The clothing manufacturers and a number of other high-risk industries for labor trafficking, which we really haven't touched on too much, you know, do have kids. Sometimes very young kids locked up in factories producing garments. You talked about sex tourism. Absolutely, did a project on that. We looked at payment patterns, travel patterns, what purchases they did in terms of security and encryption purchases, which led to some very successful identification of individuals who start off by watching sort of streaming of child abuse and then travel to higher risk countries such as Philippines, Vietnam. And their spending patterns suggest that this is not your regular tourist. If you know, if your listeners Google pig butchering, so pig
Sorry, say
butchering.
that one more. Say that one more time.
Sure, if you Google the term pig butchering.
Pig butchering. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so what that is, you know, individuals, particularly in Southeast Asia, are locked up in compounds, you know, in places like Myanmar. And basically, they're prisoners, and what their job is to run scam centers. So now you've got, you know, victims, people who've been trafficked. And their job is to scam, and so you've got sort of a double crime happening, right? That they're scamming people, they have no choice, they're locked up, they have quotas, and they're being trafficked.
And there's only so much that law enforcement can do, unless they've got like a 10 or sort of, you know, a 10 time exponential increase in resources even. But well, what about the AI side of it? Because I'm getting more and more informed about AI, as everybody is, in terms of what it can do, the availability of it, but also the absolute deep perils that can come that you've partly referred to earlier. Are there projects being set up specifically to look at the not just the dangers of AI, but how to combat that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. AI comes with a lot of value and benefits, and you know, I use it in my sort of daily job to sort of enhance our monitoring capabilities. You know, there are dangers. You know, in this case, the individual you're talking to, or the person you're looking at is not real. Or they've doctored the image or the video, you know. So you can get, you know, your family member calling you on a video call saying, "I desperately need money. I'm in trouble," and it's all fake. It's
It's all
all
fake.
doctored. But also, you know, there are dangers with AI in terms of bias, right? So you can use AI. AI is only as good as the data it relies on and the people that develop it. And so there are huge risks with that. What we are seeing is governments just begin, I'd say, to think about it and legislate around that. One in particular is, you know, sort of the use of AI to create these fake images, the use of AI to create you know, artificial child porn, which is not a real child, but it's AI generated. So there are areas I think we are going to see a lot more from governments on the responsible use of AI. There are standards being published, but I think we may need to pick up the speed on this because, you know, the horse has left the barn. And so we need to act quickly.
The financial crisis that kind of has been dribbling through specifically, you know, if you like, the West for many years now have actually prevented certain things moving forward or being, you know, funded as much as they should have been. I mean, and I rather suspect that exploitation is one of them. If you imagine your audience right now is full of people who obviously everybody uses a financial institution of some description or other, whether it's banks, insurances, whatever. What should they be asking their financial institutions regarding this? Are there questions that the listeners here could actually come up with to actually ask for explanations or talk about what their financial institutions are actually doing? Is that helpful?
I think, yeah, that's sort of an interesting sort of question. If, you know, clients were go to the bank and say, "Tell me exactly what your policies and programs are around fighting, let's call it human crime, human trafficking, child sexual exploitation. What are you doing to identify, stop monitoring?" I think the banks would pay attention to say this has become an important topic for my client base. And so, yes, I encourage it. Go to the banks, ask them, because the more people that ask, the more important it becomes, and the more resources are devoted to it. But I think at the same time, you know, and I've been sort of in the sort of financial crime industry for almost 25 years now. And we have spent an enormous amount on fighting financial crime. That's no excuse for the bad banks, you know, who have been censured and you know, fined. Absolutely. But I think at the same time, you know, if you're going to invest billions. As a, you know, if you look at the financial services industry, you're talking billions and billions of dollars. I think we've got to do more to fund the government agencies in the UK, the NCA. We've got to fund the prosecutor's offices, right? We've got to look at the sentencing guidelines. We've got to look at the burden of proof. Because what I see happening right now are all these suspicious activity reports going into this massive black hole. No fault of these agencies, but there's only so much you can do.
Yes, I think it's the nature of finance these days, to my amateur, if you like, understanding essentially, is that so much of it is remote. And I mean, I remember talking to the law enforcement in Sri Lanka, for example. They were asking, like what could they do to improve their work against the sex trafficking thing. And I'd suggested a couple of things, and a few weeks later they put something up. It was old school, okay, but it had a great impact, I think. And it was like they put this enormous great billboard up at Colombo Airport that said, "Welcome to Sri Lanka. If you abuse our children in any way, we guarantee you at least 20 years in horror class accommodation."
Yeah, and that's great. I think every country should take that example. We are seeing airports, restaurants, hotels, even in restrooms, these signs going up, with 1-800 numbers, certainly more of that. And a lot of these agencies that I work with are struggling financially, right? They're struggling financially. They're surviving day to day, and it's to say they're in the business of identifying. They're in the business of prevention, protection. Why are they struggling?
Well, there is, of course, the absolute peculiarity of human nature as well. I mean, for example, I do believe that in this country, charities to do with child exploitation, many of them actually collect less funding than donkey sanctuaries. So it's just a question of how the population views things sometimes, or maybe just doesn't even want to think about stuff that is just so beyond their horrific understanding. I think it's a question of it's market. Well, let's be honest. I think it's to do marketing as well, as actual awareness raising. What do you think of that particular point of view?
One, I think we do need to educate the public, as to, how do we get those ads out there? Who pays for those ads? And we're not talking one problem here. You're talking a multitude of problems, right? Whether that be sextortion, child sexual exploitation, trafficking. So I think there needs to be greater awareness, because unless it becomes a political issue and a voting issue, unfortunately, nothing happens no matter
No,
which country.
I totally understand what you're saying. I mean, look at that list, which of course you could add to as well, with all the kind of slavery and labor of slavery and all that other issues. Do you think it's just too much for some people that maybe what we need to do is hive off each one as a particular target so that people can actually absorb and understand? Or because it all seems to get lumped together sometimes, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that's why I say this isn't sort of, certainly there's the big message around how big the problem is, but then I think you've got to begin to say, talk about each of the areas, like the child sexual abuse, the center, the Canadian center, which monitors globally, by the way. It's sort of while it's based in Canada, the technology monitors globally. They have a massive backlog of images to go through because they don't have the resources to do that. And if you look at any stat, it's not only horrific in terms of what's happening, but the growth, is exponential. We would not tolerate this type of growth in any other area. And so I don't think we've done enough to educate the public.
I take that point very strongly. Look, Karim, I could carry on talking to you for ages, but we've got to come to the end of this. And I'm just going to give you a minute, if you would, just a sort of one last minute. Here you have the microphone to talk to your profession, if you like, although it's pretty broad, the financial industries. But what would you say to them now? Let's imagine they're all listening. That would be nice, but let's imagine they're all listening. What kind of message would you like to put out?
Take the step, do something. I'm not saying that this is easy, but there are, it can be done. There are some really easy steps. I'm available, and I don't charge for providing these services if they're around human trafficking and child sexual exploitation. Something can be done. Do something about it. For the schools, the teachers, the parents, educate yourself. Because with that knowledge, you really cannot prevent and you cannot act. So please educate yourselves. And I'd say, to the social media companies, to the ISBNs, please do more. You've got the funding, you've got the technology, you've got the capabilities. Please do more.
They've just got to have the impetus. Okay, well, look, Karim, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you and very, very informative. So to you and colleagues and everything, I wish you all the very best and strength to your work. So thank you very much for being my guest today.
Thank you for inviting me.